Hey, everybody, welcome to the first episode of the Hideous Laughter podcast. My name's Griffin. I'm the game master of this actual play, actually drunk Pathfinder podcast. I want to tell you guys a little bit about what the podcast is, since this is the intro for the first episode. We're a group of best friends out in Columbus, Ohio, playing Pathfinder, drinking beers, having a good time. We're playing the Carrion Crown Adventure Path, which is a spooky gothic horror adventure path. We're so excited you decided to listen to our first episode. If you continue to enjoy these episodes, we'll be releasing our first three episodes at the same time when we get started, and then we'll be releasing on a weekly cadence on Thursdays after that. If you guys want to follow our progress, keep in touch with us, reach out to us, we have a website. It's the Hideous Laughter HideousLaughterPodcast.com. We also have Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. Reach out to us. Send us a message. Give us some feedback. Any reviews you guys are willing to give us, we would love. We're just absolutely excited to get started, and we're absolutely amazed that you're here listening. So without further ado, welcome to the Hideous Laughter Podcast.
Do you like liquor and things that go boo? Then buckle up, listener, because this one's for you. Prepare yourself for the Hideous Laughter Podcast.
Hello, and welcome to the Hideous Laughter Podcast. My name is Griffin Norman. I'm going to be your host, your game master. So let me tell you a little bit about the podcast. Besides the fact that we're super glad for you listening, you may or may not be new to Pathfinder, and we are a Pathfinder actual play podcast. What Pathfinder is it's basically an offshoot of Dungeons & Dragons. It's basically the more rules-heavy, more complicated versions of D&D. So D&D split off on third edition into Pathfinder as we know it, and D&D 4th edition, D&D 5th edition. We're playing Pathfinder. We like the rules. We like the adventure paths. Speaking of adventure paths, we are playing the Carrion Crown Adventure Path by Paizo. We're super excited to play it. It's a gothic horror campaign. We're going to have a lot of fun with it. So I'd like to introduce all of my players now, but before I do that, I want everybody to tell me your name and what you're drinking.
Hi, Griffin. I'm Steve. I'm drinking a Hams today. From the land of sky blue waters.
Hi, Griffin. I'm Brooks. How are you today?
I'm doing all right, Brooks.
I am drinking White Claw.
White Claw, what flavor?
Natural lime.
That's a good one.
I am Haley, and I'm drinking sangria.
Yum.
Hi, I'm Emily, and I'm drinking a wine spritzer.
We got some sophisticated taste over here. I'm Griffin, and I'm drinking some bourbon. So I'd like to go around the circle, guys, and maybe we can tell the listeners a little bit about ourselves, a little bit about what we do for a living and our day jobs, and then give me some of your Pathfinder experience. How long have you been playing? What adventure paths have you run? That kind of thing. And then maybe just tell us what your character's name is. How's that?
I think that's a great idea.
All right. Well, we'll start with you, Steve.
Cool. Glad I spoke up. All right. So let's see. I am in global trade compliance. That's what I do for a living. Basically, I help move freight all around the world and make sure that there's no customs restrictions when we're, you know, bringing all kinds of stuff all over the place. As far as Pathfinder experience goes, Brooks, Emily, myself, and one of our buddies, Tim, we have been playing Rise of the Rune Lords for a very long time. We're in book 6. I think we're currently like 16th and 17th level. We've been playing for probably about 2.5 years. It's been a long time. Also, a couple people in the room play Starfinder together, so I'll let Haley tell you about that later.
Okay. Brooks, how about you?
I am a lab tech. And as far as Pathfinder goes, I was very new to it. I still am pretty new to it in the sense of not knowing some of the rules, but you are here to help me out on that, I guess.
Yep, I think I'll give it a shot.
Brooks has been playing literally for just as long as Emily and myself.
He's been playing
pretty
Liquor Finder.
Pretty new.
Still pretty new. Learning out new rules.
Okay, cool. Haley?
So my title is Value Stream Improvement Champion. Basically, I work for a ceiling and wall tile manufacturer, and I'm in charge of the lean and improvements around the plant. As far as Pathfinder experience, I've had about 3 or 4 years of running different, being in different adventures, and I currently GM our Starfinder campaign, and then my character name is Eclipse.
Oh, you're the only one that did that. Thank you, Haley.
Oh, cool. I remembered. I wrote it down.
Oh, nice. We'll circle back to the boys.
My name's Emily. I am a graduate student. I am studying food science and technology, specifically food microbiology. So I try to keep food safe to eat and not spoiled. I've been playing Pathfinder for just as long as Brooks and Steve, doing Rise of the Rune Lords. And so I'm excited to get to try a new adventure path and a new character. And my character this time is Lyra.
Okay. Back to the boys. What's the name of your characters, guys? I think I gave pretty clear instructions.
You know what, Griffin? I'm just so nervous. I'm so excited.
Yeah,
you know,
I can see you shaking anything, like a leaf.
Anything could happen in the next 2 hours. My character's name is Matumbe.
Okay. What about you, Brooks?
My character's name is Ikmer, or Ick for short.
Okay, perfect. So my name's Griffin. I'm going to be the game master for this Pathfinder actual play podcast, and I'm super excited about it. I work in finance. As you can plainly hear, none of us are in the creative sphere, so we're going to do our best to give you guys a fun and out-of-the-box podcast. Just remember, we got 3 science nerds, a number cruncher, and a dude that cares about trade compliance, so definitely the liveliest bunch you'll ever hear from. As far as my Pathfinder experience goes, I've been playing for as long as Haley. We had a Skulls and Shackles campaign that went for about 4 books in 2 years. I ran Rise of the Rune Lords for 2 books. We're currently playing Starfinder with Haley. What are we, like, half a book into Iron Fang Invasion? I've ran many, many modules. Some of the characters from which hopefully you'll hear voices from as we progress through this fun adventure path. So without further ado, why don't we jump into it? You guys ready for that?
Here we go.
Yeah. All righty.
Sounds delightful.
Okay, so the first thing I'll ask is, the beginning of the adventure takes place in a small village in Ustalav. Now, Ustalav is a continent in the Inner Sea region of Galarian, which is basically the main world of Pathfinder, the Inner Sea region being basically Eurasia. Ustalav is basically the Russia analog, if you want to think of it that way. Now, Ustalav has a bunch of provinces, a bunch of little towns, Ravengrow being this small city that used to basically be used to sustain the biggest prison in the country. You guys are visiting because you've been summoned by a woman named Kendra Lorimore. She has asked each of you to bear witness to her father's funeral, and she's begging that each of you come there. Her dad was, and all of your characters know her father, but he was basically this eccentric, super intelligent, wizardly man that explored the world and made a bunch of friends along the way, your characters being some of those friends. So you've gotten a personal invitation to come and pay your respects. So why don't, at this point, we get into where your characters are from and how they got themselves to Ravengrow, and then we can kind of start building what you guys are doing and what's going on. Does that sound good?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. So, Steve, how did Matumbe come to Ustalav and in particular Ravengrow?
Yeah, sure. So Matumbe is here for the funeral, just like everybody else. Matumbe is originally from the Mwangi Expanse. For those of you who are unfamiliar, the Mwangi Expanse is the Pathfinder analog to like South or Central America combined with a little Central Africa. So jungles, savannas, the stuff you'd see in movies like Congo or Apocalyptica. Ooh, that's spooky. That is spooky.
Love that response.
Matumbe met Professor Lorimore on one of Professor Lorimore's expeditions into the Mwangi Expanse. Professor Lorimore got very sick. He came down with malaria, or they like to call it jungle fever, and Matumbe helped help nurse him back to health and save him. And in response, you know, Professor Lorimore kind of owed him a life debt. And at the end of Professor Lorimore's life, one of his last, I guess, one of his part of in his last will and testament, he summoned Matumbe for the funeral.
Okay. What about you, Brooks? How'd Ikmer get here?
Ikmer is here for the professor's funeral. He, number one, is a half-orc. He met the professor through his job, which is a caravan escort. And during that time, he saved the professor's life. And in that time, the professor gave Ikmer a broken long spear. And with that, Ikmer thought that that meant a lot to him. And through that, he was connected.
To the professor.
To the professor.
Awesome. Okay, Haley, why is Eclipse here?
Yeah, so Eclipse didn't actually know the professor, but her dad knew the professor, and he passed away recently, so the invitation was actually for her dad and family members. So basically, Eclipse packed her bags, grabbed her dad's battle axe for protection, and headed off on her way because she doesn't have a whole lot left. Thought this would start new.
So Lyra is here for the funeral. She was born into a cult in a coastal city, but doesn't really remember much about her time there because she was rescued at a pretty young age and was then cared for by a devout follower of Erastil. She lived a simple but a good life there. Professor Lorimore kept in touch with her and helped her keep her nightmares at bay. And she will now miss his friendship and support after his passing.
Okay. So you guys
I guess it should be noted that Ikmer was very poor growing up, and so a broken long spear and
is like a good weapon.
Was
for
actually
him.
Yeah.
Okay. So you guys all your characters at this point have made their way to Ravengrow, the town where Lorimore lived, and where his funeral is taking place. In the note that Kendra sent you, she does mention that she's going to be busy the night before the funeral, as you can imagine. So she recommends that you stay at a inn called the Outward Inn. So if your characters make their way there, we can get cracking.
Does it have any relation to the bar Outer Inn?
No, but it's a good call though.
Thank goodness.
So I assume your characters make their way to the inn. Does one of you enter first?
I guess Ikmer, he wouldn't be overly afraid to walk in, but being quite a tall half-orc, he stands out all by himself, even though he tries to make himself small, hunches over, and tries to find as few people as possible and hide out.
So he's like this kind of big gangly dude walking into the bar and trying to make himself look like he's a dwarf or something, walking into the corner of the room and sitting down.
Exactly. He would prefer to be somewhere less populated, but he's not afraid to get what he wants, I guess.
And the bartender. She's this kind of like middle-aged woman, and she calls out to Ick as he walks in, and she's like, "You there? I've seen half-orcs your age. You don't look like you're old enough to be in here."
"Well, I'm just trying to stay the night. I'm here for your funeral, so..."
"My funeral? What is this? It's not my funeral."
I'm sorry. Not your funeral, the professor."
"Oh, Professor Lorimore. Oh, yes. He's, I'll be attending as well, so, if you'd like to sit down, I could get you a cup of water or something."
"Yes, please."
"All right, it's on the house. Go over in the corner. Don't be sitting at the bar."
"Okay."
"All right." And so Ickmer goes over to the corner, and he's sitting over there, but he can't really help but notice there's this guy in a big kind of flashy cloak sitting in the corner of the room, and he's got this deck of beautiful cards, and they're almost the size of the palm of his hand. And he's currently sitting with what looks like a townswoman, and he's laying these cards out in front of her, and he seems to be saying stuff, and he's getting excited over in the corner of the room. So Ickmer, I imagine, is like watching this guy, and his interest is probably piqued, especially if he's at the bar kind of sitting and waiting to go to bed.
Very true. He doesn't have the highest intelligence score.
No.
So pretty much anything flashy, somewhat interesting would pique his interest.
Okay, so at this point, I think the next person likely enters the bar.
Yeah, Eclipse is pretty excited to get out. She hasn't seen a whole lot of the world. She's pretty small, so actually she's small and has some gray skin, so to cover that, she's generally wearing a cloak pretty far over her face, has the battle axe on her back, and kind of walks in the bar a little wide-eyed, looking around. She hasn't been in a place like this much. She kind of was a homebody and was really stuck in the small village she was in, so this is a pretty new experience, just going into a bar.
And you can tell, like, the bar's not as full as maybe E can't tell since she's not a big bar goer, but this bar is not bumping. It's, you know, there's a couple what you can imagine are, you know, regulars, and there's this half-orc kid sitting in the corner of the room staring at a guy in the corner. So as you walk in, the bartender's really paying attention to new patrons. So she's like, "Oh, you over there, halfling child. Put that cloak down."
"Neither. I'm not a halfling, and I'm not a kid."
"All right. Well, how old are you?"
"I'm like 50.
"All right. You want a drink? Do you have an ID?"
"No ID. But I would like a drink."
"Okay. What are you having?"
"I guess a mug of ale."
All right. And she kind of side-eyes you, and she gives you the mug of ale, and she's like, "That'll be one copper."
And Eclipse will pay her.
Okay. And she's kind of looking at you. She knows the locals here, so finally she kind of works herself up to ask, "What are you doing here? We don't get visitors in Ravengrow."
My dad was a companion of Professor Lorimore, so I'm here for that funeral."
"Ah, Lorimore seems to be a popular man at this bar tonight. Well, have a drink, drown your sorrows. I'll put it on your tab whenever you need a new one." And with that, you're kind of sitting at the bar, and I imagine this guy in the corner is still making this real big show of doing a harrow reading. And so it's hard with so few people in the bar not to notice him. So I imagine you're probably watching as well as... Motumbe enters the bar.
All right, so when Motumbe enters the bar, especially if the bar's not bumping, as they say, he's someone who you're going to notice. I cast Motumbe as Shaquille O'Neal, so he's about 7 feet tall, and there's a lot of muscle on those bones.
a lot of muscle these days?
Oh, these days, too. Is, I mean, there's a healthy coating of
he's got a healthy
padding
beef,
over
beef
the,
to him.
Yeah, absolutely.
What race is he?
He's human. So he's an extraordinarily dark-skinned human who is wearing armor actually that's made of horn, like sheep or goat horn. And over that, he's wearing a half cloak, half tunic. I don't know if you guys are familiar with any of the Assassin's Creed games, but the newest one, Origins, the main character is wearing this like kind of it's like dirty white tunic over his regular clothes that's like half hooded, only covers part of his body, and that's kind of what I envision Mituba is wearing.
So Mituba is wearing like a poncho.
Kind of. Yeah, actually, that's
okay,
pretty apt.
That sounds about
that's
right.
pretty apt.
Okay.
And on his back, he's got a big wooden shield, and he is carrying a large iron-bound book that has a big old spiral on the cover.
On the cover. Okay. So Mitume comes in, and this woman again addresses him, and she's like, "But you're told drink of water, aren't you?"
"And that is exactly what I will be ordering tonight, ma'am."
"Hey, what kind of accent is that?"
"I am from the Mwongi Expanse."
"Ah, I couldn't tell. You fit right in here in Ravengrow."
"Your sarcasm is noted."
"I'm surprised you know sarcasm. You know common well."
"I will be drinking away from the bar tonight, madam. I would appreciate if we do not speak again."
All right. You take your drink and you go sulk in the corner. Why don't you go pay attention to that little half-orc boy?"
So Mitume does actually walk over to the table with the half-orc and the question mark?
I think Eclipse said she was at the bar.
I'm sorry.
I stayed at the bar.
Okay, so I'm going to walk over and I'm not going to sit down at the table quite yet, but be standing over it and look down at Ikmer. And Mitume is going to say,
"You appear to be a traveler in these parts. I have not seen a lot of half-orcs on my journey in Ustilav. I imagine you're here for the exact same reason I am."
Well, I guess I'm originally from my northwest Ustilav, but yeah, I'm probably here for that. I'm here for the funeral.
"If that is the case, would you mind if I took a seat at your table?"
Okay, if you don't mind sitting next to me.
Mitume looks around, probably sees a lot of deserted tables.
Yep, yeah.
And a lot of people that he does not want to sit by. And recognizing that there's a fellow traveler who's here for this exact same reason that he's going to be seeing tomorrow at the funeral, he's going to sit down and strike up a conversation with Ikmer.
Okay, so as you two are doing that, I imagine Lyra, being the fourth and final party member, enters the door.
Yeah, so Lyra will enter a little bit cautiously, a little nervous, but also excited. She grew up in smaller towns, so she's never really been in a tavern. Even if it's not super busy, it's still more people than she's used to seeing, all gathering in one space. But she still kind of knows what to do, so she'll walk up to the bar.
Okay, so she walks up to the bar, and the bartender just comes up to her and says, "Let me guess, here for Lorimar, are you? You're a face I haven't seen around here."
"Wow, do you have the gift of sight?"
Yeah, ESPN, baby. Why don't you have a drink if you're drinking? Otherwise, go sit at a table."
"Yeah, I'd like a glass of water. And do you have salt here, too? I'll take some salt."
All right, fucking weirdo. Here's some salt. You want it in the water?"
"Yeah, just a little bit."
"Okay, enjoy yourself."
"Thanks."
And so, does
a
Lyra...
confrontational bartender.
Well, I mean, these are pretty weird requests.
Yeah.
"Hi, I'm a little boy. Can I come to your bar? Can I sit at the bar?"
"No. Hi, I'm a weird YAG person that you've probably never seen. Can I have a drink? You look like a toddler. Hi, can I have salt in my water?" "No."
The only one who looks like they can drink orders water.
Yeah. Yeah, but Timmy looks like he can drink, but she's like, "I don't know if I have the kind of shit your country serves."
Oh, jeez.
I mean, there is ESPN.
There is ESPN. So
I think in Pathfinder, ESPN means like ESP and more.
And more, yeah, because and ESPN, stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. ESPN's, actually. I forgot the S.
Yeah. No, you're good.
So, Lyra, do you go sit with the boys, or do you... She doesn't really point you in their direction, so you could just sit at any table, or if you want to sit at the bar and continue drinking your salt water, I guess she'll serve you more salt water.
I think I would be a little interested in what's going on with the card reading, so she wouldn't go right up to the table, but kind of be close by trying to see what's going on there.
Okay, so if Lyra's looking over at the card reading, you can tell that he's basically finished up with the townsperson that he was doing the reading for. And so he's kind of, you know, stacking his deck back up. He's sitting in the corner, he lights another candle, and he sits in the corner with his fingers tapping each other, and he kind of waits for another person to come up to him. Are you guys still talking, or do you guys take notice of this as well?
I don't think I'd be taking notice of it. I think Matumbe would immediately launch into some rhetoric about Pharasma and be talking to Ikmer, basically beyond where Ikmer would be comfortable on the subject.
Ikmer's like, what's Pharasma?
Yeah. I'm kind of picturing this as talking to a brick wall.
Or having a brick wall talk to you.
Yeah. Yeah. Or, well, the type of responses that you're getting from Ike are definitely very short and not very deep, that's for sure. But seeing the cards, or I guess the man in the corner with being done with the town folk, he would probably be extremely cautious and shy, but be at the same time drawn to the cloaked figure.
So I imagine Ikmer probably gets up from the table, and he's side-eyeing this guy, but he moves a little bit closer, and the guy can tell immediately what Ikmer's doing, and he says,
"Young boy, what are you doing over there? Come over here. You need to come sit and have this. You need to have the experience of a herald reading. Is this your first time in Ravengrow?"
Yes.
Your first time. I could be your first, young man.
Okay.
For herald readings, of course.
I guess.
Okay, come. Come sit down, then.
Okay. And Ikmer shuffles over and quickly pulls a seat out and jumps in the seat.
Oh, you are a very shy boy, aren't you? Now, what is your name?
My name is Ikmer, but pretty much everybody calls me Ik, based on, you know, my face.
Ah, yes, but who are you, Ikmer? Why don't we find out?
And so the man draws a deck of cards that he had been waiting patiently for somebody to come let him perform his harrowing. And he says,
"Before we do so, I do need a cuppa, Ikmer."
Uh-oh.
Okay, I can see that you're just a boy. I will start the tab for you, okay?
Okay.
Matumbe will walk up and says, my friend, if you want this man to peer into your past to tell you about your future, that is not something that I would be interested in, but we are friends on this journey for Professor Lorimore's funeral. I will lend you the copper piece.
Thank you, but I'd rather not be in your debt.
There is no debt in this life.
Oh, okay. I'm not sure exactly.
That is a weird thing to say, large man.
Coming from a harrower.
Well, you know, maybe someday I could get a reading from you.
Maybe tonight.
Perfect. So the man pulls out the deck of cards, and I imagine Ikmer is staring pretty intently at the deck. This deck is actually, the cards look kind of beautiful. There's like this silver foil on the back of them, and you can see they have this beautiful sapphire eye on the back of them. They look like no cards you've ever seen. I don't even know if Ikmer's seen cards to begin with. He seems like a pretty poor, depraved kid.
He's probably been played a few times.
Okay, so he's one of those kids that's been gambling with the other kids on the street corner for scraps.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then probably lost it based on the fact that he couldn't follow the ball underneath the cups type of sort.
So the man reaches down to his deck and hands it over to Ikmer and has Ikmer draw a card. What does your card say, boy?
It says the beating.
Ah, the beating. That does not bode well for you, Ikmer. The beating is a foreboding card. An assault from all sides, if you will. Ikmer, I can tell. I've seen your face. You have been beat before, have you not?
Yeah. That's very true, to be honest. That's pretty much how I made my mother money on the side. And she kind of takes it all from me, but she's happy, and we're a happy family.
Oh, you seem like a happy family, Ikmer. I too like to get beat in my familial matters. Now, what I have to say to you is not good news. You see, the beating represents not only the beating of the body, but also the beating of the soul. And I worry for you, Ikmer, because the boy that you currently are may not reflect the man that you become.
Okay, what does that mean?
And as the harrower explains, his voice fades, and the sounds of a jeering crowd grow louder as the scene turns to a large crowd. As we progress through the crowd, it opens into a circle of spectators surrounding combat between two figures. One figure is a menacing Sarni man who relentlessly assaults his half-orc adversary. The crowd chants, "Beat the beast! Beat the beast!" Blows rain down on the half-orc, but he refuses to retaliate. It seems he's immovable. Yet the all-out assault from the Sarni man leaves the attacker more and more fatigued. "Why won't you fall?" he huffs. Ikmer remains silent, absorbing punch after punch, unflinching and unmoving. Finally, the exhausted Sarni pulls out a dagger and slides it between the half-orc's ribs. He falls to the ground, writhing in pain, and the crowd erupts in cheers. The Sarni is handed a coin purse, and the crowd quickly disperses. Ikmer's mother looms over him with fresh coin of her own.
"Get up and clean yourself off, or you'll go to bed without dinner," she spits at him before stepping over his pitiful frame and leaving him in the dirt. Ikmer lays for what seems like hours before a figure emerges from the darkness. A strong-looking woman with bright yellow eyes and wild black hair emerges and approaches the wounded man. She props his stiff body up and forces a vial of liquid down his throat.
"I know what it is to be born a monster, boy," she says. "You may think of it as a curse in this moment, but it can become a great blessing if you let it into your heart. Ikmer, you were born with strength in your blood. Do not let these foolish villagers use you for entertainment."
Ik feels his wounds heal, and as he struggles to gain his feet, the woman turns and walks away. She looks back and smiles a toothy smile at him.
"I do hope our paths cross again, monster."
Just then, her shape morphs into that of a large black wolf as she bounds into the woods. Ik looks up into the inky black sky, and he hears the sound of howls echoing in the distance. And we fade back to the scene at the bar, and Ikmer has had his harrow read. And the man looks kind of weakened. And Ikmer, as you were having this flashback with him, you could see in the moment that the man wasn't full of parlor tricks And he wasn't doing this for coin. He could see a part of you. And I feel like that probably scares you.
Oh, yes. Absolutely. So, I mean, he was trying to act small before.
And now he's like,
definitely trying, like, he's trying really, really hard now. Probably, like, clenching his broken spear and
oh, no weapons at the bar.
Okay, sorry.
And then puts it down
hurriedly. Definitely doesn't want to cause trouble, but
okay. So as this is happening, you can are you two Lyra and Eclipse, are you both still at the bar? Is that what we...
I would have... Eclipse would have probably slowly kind of walked over to watch the new reading happen.
So you see that the man he just did, or the boy he just did a reading for is kind of like shaking as he walks away.
Yeah.
And I think Eclipse has a sick enough mind where that would probably interest her.
Oh, she is highly interested. In fact, she will put down... She puts down the hood of her cloak, and you see just her kind of gray, sickly skin and the jet black hair come out, and she sits down, and she's like, my turn.
Well, well, aren't you a sight? What exactly are you, dear?
I've been told I'm a Wyang.
And what exactly have you been told that is? Because I have never seen something like you in all my days.
I'm from the other side of the other continent, across the big north. So my family took a journey, is what they think, and I was found by the side. And that's what they say I am. I'm not really sure. I don't remember much from before.
Well, you're not giving me much to go off of to do this reading, young lady. But I do believe in my powers. Because a hero would not be a hero without a true heroer.
And so he reaches the deck over to you and hands you a card.
Now, what is it that you've drawn?
I've drawn the Eclipse.
Ah, and did you not tell me your name was Eclipse?
I don't think I told you this.
Maybe I just knew then. Isn't that weird that you would draw the exact card of your birth name?
She eyes him very suspiciously. Also, by the way, Griffith's actually giving us real physical cards with these on them. Like, props there.
Yeah, that is actually happening right now.
You know, I try my best over here. I'm working for coppers, for Christ's sake.
So the...
We'll take some pictures of the cards and throw them up on the Insta.
Throw them up. So he says, the eclipse does not have a happy meaning either. You saw the boy leave, the boy before you. His card was not a happy meaning, and I do not believe yours is. For the eclipse represents the loss of your path, the loss of your faith, the loss of your purpose. I do believe you've lost one of these three things already. Maybe your path? Did you lose your path to make it to Ustalav?
I made it here, okay, I'm here. So, probably not that one, I guess.
Are you sure? Is your family here?
No.
Ah, and how did you lose them?
I don't remember.
Ah, the eclipse.
And as the harrower reiterates the meaning of the eclipse, a voice fades in.
Eclipse! Eclipse! Are you paying attention?
A silver-haired man waves his hand in front of a small doll-like figure in an attempt to get her attention.
I need to gather a few things for your mother. Please watch her for a few minutes and alert me if her condition changes.
In the bed in front of the Wyang girl is an unconscious middle-aged woman. Her shallow breaths make a ragged sound as her chest rises and falls. The man leaves the room, and within minutes, the woman in bed's eyes fly open.
Eclipse, listen to me, she rasps. It's my time, dear. I'm so sorry I couldn't stay by your side longer. I love you.
With a final gasp, the woman's chest becomes still. Eclipse shuts her mother's eyes, stands over her, and concentrates. Suddenly, a shimmering gray mist escapes the dead woman's mouth and coalesces around the Wyan girl's hands. The girl grasps a bell hanging from her side and starts ringing it over the corpse of her mother. Flash forward, and a coffin is being lowered into the earth. The gray-haired man sobs and holds his daughter's hand. Nearly all the mourners shed tears, all save for Eclipse.
Honey, aren't you upset? We've lost your mother. She's gone.
She's never gone, Dad. She'll always be with me.
Upon saying this, the bell on Eclipse's side begins ringing and ringing and ringing. And we fade back to the bar. And gosh, this harrower looks ragged right now. And he's like,
oh, I've seen some shit in my day. I'm doing your dad. I've seen some shit in my day. I've seen a very lot of it, but Jesus Christ, you guys and your backstories.
Creative.
And so I imagine Eclipse pays him his copper or whatever he asked for, and likely leaves the table. And Matumbe, have you been standing over this table the whole time, just kind of like sidled up to the harrow table, just not saying a word?
Standing over the table like a 7 foot tall, over 300 pound man.
Like one, or that's what Matumbe is?
I mean, that's exactly what he is. Okay. But that's just a visual for you.
Okay.
You there, big man, would you like to sit down? You seem to be surveying my wares. Are you not entertained? Do you not think I will be able to see something in you?
I hesitate to take readings from people who believe that they can see into the future, for the future is not written.
Well, the future may not be written, but I do know a lady, and she lives in the middle of a spiral, and she knows the future. And she knows the past.
You know this woman, and he arches an eyebrow.
Please sit, and I will tell you what she has to say about you.
I will sit.
So Matumbe sits down, and the man passes him yet another card.
What do you have there?
The Inquisitor.
Ah, the Inquisitor, huh? And what do you think of that, Matumbe?
I would say that this is an appropriate card. A surprising one to pull from an entire deck.
Faith, she is a funny thing, but the Lady of Graves does work in mysterious ways, does she not?
This is a point I will not argue.
But let's figure out what the Inquisitor means. You can see the man. Oh, he looks like a white version of you. He's carrying a book much like yours.
Indeed.
And much like you, he shares some similar ideals. The Inquisitor represents an immutable object that cannot be deceived or influenced. A man resolute in his faith, who cannot be swayed by outward influences. Do you think that describes you, Matumbe?
Undoubtedly.
Undoubtedly.
And as the Harrow reader continues to explain Motumbe's card, we fade to black and enter on darkness. The smell of smoke and the heat of the jungle are ever present as we see a large Mwangi man jump out of his bed with a start. Then the screams begin. Matumbe bursts through his hut door, nearly tearing it off as he rushes onto the scene. Many of the surrounding huts of his village are ablaze, their thatched roofs casting an orange glow over the panic. He can hear a familiar voice cry out to him from the distance, broken by sobs.
Our daughter, she screams. Something has taken her into the jungle.
Mutumbe pauses for a brief moment to comfort his wife and wrap their boys in his arms before letting go and silently hustling into the jungle after the unseen intruder. He follows the trail of disturbed undergrowth that soon becomes a path of blood. A clearing forms up ahead, and the sounds of combat ring clear in the odd silence of the jungle. Mutumbe skirts to the side of the clearing, hoping to catch his village's unknown assailant off guard when the clearing is suddenly illuminated by a flash of holy light. A pained voice rings out in the night.
The Lady of Graves bids your destruction, vile abomination.
Without thinking, Mutumbe rushes to the source of the sound and finds a woman clutching her neck with one hand and holding a limp body of a child with the other. Across the clearing, he can barely make out the shadow of a figure hit the ground and then dissolve into mist. He rushes to the woman, who falls to her knees and then slumps to her side. Cradling her head in his hands, he realizes her throat has been mortally gashed, and she gasps up at him.
The book! Bury me as it says in the book. The Lady of Graves is waiting for me.
Mutumbe reaches to the woman's side and produces a large iron-bound book emblazoned with a spiral made of bones. And we fade back into the tavern. And Mutumbe remembers this scene. And he remembers it as the start of his journey with Pharasma. And I think he maybe realizes that this man isn't full of shit.
Yeah, with that cut back, I imagine that maybe the camera's right up on his face and it is completely immovable. He's like a stony complexion. Like he's staring directly at the man, like the man has peered into his very soul.
So does Mutumbe walk away finally?
Yeah, that's enough for him. He sees that this man is not full of shit and he does not want to experience any more of that.
And I think before Lyra can really do anything at the bar, I know she's likely watching this unfold from the bar. I think the harrower points to her and kind of gives her the come here finger and beckons her over to the table.
She'll kind of like look around, make sure it's actually her. And
who else is at the bar but me?
Yeah.
The bartender? You want her?
And then she'll make her way over to the harrower.
Okay. So she makes it to the harrower and he tells her,
I've been waiting for you to come here in particular. You see, you seem to have something of an aura about you. I'm not sure I can place it, but I've been dying to read your future.
You do seem to have great power. I know one day I'll end up at the ocean, but if you could help me figure out my path, that would be great.
Why would you think that you'd end up at the ocean, girl?
I just know. It's just intuition.
Ah, well, you seem to be a fish out of water here.
And he reaches over to his deck and hands you a card.
What is it you have there?
The Tangled Briar.
Ah, the Tangled Briar. That represents something from your past. Maybe it is a thing or a creature that will have some influence on you. Can you remember such a thing?
There was a time in my life where there was a presence, but I was so young, I don't remember much of it. I think I've blocked it out, but I do have nightmares. They've been getting worse.
And as Lyra talks to the harrower, we zoom into her eyes. And as we zoom back out, the face staring at us is of a much younger child. We move further from Lyra and see she's sitting atop an altar within a half-submerged cavern. Between the altar, bodies float on the surface of the black water, some man and others horrible scaly abominations from the sea. As we pan out further still, we see the cause of the carnage. A party of four adventurers wades waist-deep towards a child. Among their ranks are an aging man carrying a book of spells, a silver fox with a lute and a bow, a younger magic user, apprentice to the elder, and a middle-aged paladin, his resplendent silver armor shimmering in the unnatural light of the cavern. As the men approach, the paladin calls to Lyra.
Come, child. We're here to rescue you from this cursed place.
Upon hearing this, Lyra's head snaps back. Those once clear blue eyes appear to fill with a black ichor, and her mouth opens as if to let out a scream. Instead, we hear a beautiful yet otherworldly song echo off the dripping walls. The music coming from Lyra is both melodic and discordant. It sounds too deep to be coming from such a small child, and quickly begins to harmonize with itself, almost as if Lyra had the voices of multiple people inside her. The paladin peers around at his companions as they begin to cry. He watches as the tears of his friends turn to blood, chumming the water beneath them. Without hesitating, he charges toward the child, and the water seems to part in his wake. His hands crackle with holy light as he embraces the child, and her song subsides. Tentacles erupt from the once placid water as the paladin whispers into the girl's ear.
I vow to protect you until the end, Lyra.
And we fade back. And Lyra, I don't know how your character is feeling, but she kind of felt this scene unfold. So tell me a little bit.
Yeah, so I think all of the color would just kind of drain out of her already very pale face. And she just looks completely shocked as one of her nightmares got brought in to like actual memory and kind of pieced it together a little bit more. It makes some of her visions and her sights seem more real and not just dreams of a child.
And so the harrower can see that, you know, Lyra looks a little more frazzled than even the rest of you. And he says, is this something you've seen before, child?
Yes, I thought it was just dreams, bad dreams from, you know, stories around the campfire. But now I wonder if maybe the other things I've seen have been real, too.
This is always the question we have us with the gift. I think you may have this gift, Lyra.
And he grabs your card from your hands and puts it with the rest of the deck. He shuffles it once, twice, and then he slides it back across the table to you. And he says,
I have many sets of these hero cards. They help me attune my powers. I do believe you should have this set. Take it with you and hone the divination that I know that you possess.
Thank you. I'll practice every day. I'll make sure I master the skill.
Well, you will try. You'll never be good as me, though.
And with that, the man gets up from the table, and as he gets up, the candles on that side of the room go out. And as he's passing you, Lyra, he whispers,
you can call me A. If you ever need me, just write something down, and it will get to me.
And he leaves the bar.
Thank you, Steve, with the Sirenscape.
Killing it tonight.
So you've all been through this weird experience, and I think you've all seen each other go to this guy and come back like feeling different. So do your characters talk to each other? I know Matumbe and Nickmer have chatted a little bit. Nickmer's probably looking for some less intelligent conversation.
are we back to the same table? Because we could be sitting at the same table saying nothing.
Probably.
Motubi is just reading.
Yeah, I'm just, I got the book in front of me, honestly.
Reading and drinking.
Ikmir would like kind of look around, make sure like no one else like heard all of that. He's pretty sad, like ashamed that it happened. Even though I guess like it wasn't his fault, but still wants to make sure like no one else heard it. But and then probably change the subject to I don't know, shiny things that he sees at
shiny
the bar.
Things.
Tell you all the things you have seen today at this bar.
Okay, so what about Eclipse?
What's I'm saying Eclipse would probably actually go up to the two of you guys, and especially Ick, because Ick was before her, and ask, did you see stuff too? I saw so many things.
I don't know quite what you're talking about. He just told me about the weather and stuff.
Bluff check.
Yeah. Okay.
First roll of the podcast. That's gonna be a bluff check, Ikmer.
Natty 19.
Oh god.
21 total.
And what? I sense motive.
Yeah, you got a sense motive.
Got a plus zero to this. I got 18.
Ooh.
Dang. So you kind of get the gist that. Well, okay, maybe. Maybe that happened. You're not sure, but you think, yeah, maybe they talked weather. Maybe that kid's really afraid of the weather.
Well, my experience is a little different. But
tell
glad yours
me about
was pleasant.
Your experience.
Hello?
Hello.
Was your experience a vision?
My experience was something I would not believe. It was intensely personal. Something that only someone there could have remembered. But yet, this man in front of me was able to conjure it in both his and my mind.
Okay, so it wasn't just in my head. Like, that happened to you too.
It did. And though this was events that happened many years ago, it frightens me to this day.
Eclipse kind of breathes up. Like, thank goodness. It's not just me. She's worried, like, she just went off on her own.
She just had a...
she was really worried about that.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I think at this point, Lyra would have maybe overheard a little bit of your conversation, and after shuffling through the cards a couple more times, she'd come over and just say, wow, that guy had some real abilities. That was pretty cool.
Our fates are not sealed. What you saw was the past, but the man spoke of knowing the Lady of Graves. I'm not sure if you are familiar, but she is the patron that I follow. The Lady of Graves, Pharasma, is the one who judges us at the end of this life and welcomes us into the next. I believe that this man has some sort of communication with her, and is able to divine certain things because of it.
Are you talking about gods? Because I'm not. My mommy and dad said not to listen about that.
I am. And though you may not care about the divine certainly cares about you.
Ikmer is just staring at the cards that was laid out on the table. And is halfway, like, scared of them, but can't look away.
Yeah, they are. I mean, again, Ikmer being a poor boy, these cards are pretty special-looking cards.
And shiny.
Yeah, and
how
shiny.
How come the cards that you gave us don't have silver foil on them, Griffin?
If I was a rich boy, then I'd have shiny hero cards for you. If I was a wealthy boy. Does that explain it?
Yes, thanks.
And if we had advertisers, that's where we would cut for commercial.
If I had Blue Apron. Okay, so are you guys all, like, talking to each other at this point? And maybe, like, hey, you know, Also, yeah, I saw a weird thing. My name's Batumbe. You guys are kind of blunt with your... Did you see a vision? Oh, me too. I think he talks to Pharasma.
I honestly, I don't think E would have even thought about it. She would have just been like, seriously, like, did you see that shit? Like, I'm worried about myself.
Okay.
Maybe after she would have calmed down a little bit and said, like, my name is Eclipse. You can call me E.
I think it's funny that we have water, salt water, and one alcoholic beverage on a podcast where all of us are actively drinking.
Yeah, I'm a couple deep right now.
Our characters are so pure right now.
So pure for the moment.
Yeah, Matumbe doesn't imbibe.
He doesn't imbibe?
No, he does not. No.
He just puffs.
No.
Matumbe, the magic dragon.
Eclipse might not be familiar with ale, but she sure is gonna like try this new experience every time.
Yeah, I wonder how many it takes like a 30-pound being to get drunk.
How many not is she deep?
One.
Probably one, but like, you know, imagine when the hobbits in Lord of the Rings ordered their first drink and it's like giant.
Yeah,
that's her right now.
I was thinking volume would just surpass all.
Right.
Yeah, just like stuffed with ale. They gave her, the bartender gave her a thimble, actually. Okay, so you guys know in the notes that you got from Kendra, Professor Lorimore's daughter, that you should probably spend the night here. And she said that she would settle up the expenses with the bartender, the owner of the inn. So you guys are pretty much free and clear. If you go up and show her like your letter from Kendra, she'll get you a room.
Does that mean my ale is discounted now?
But yeah, you never showed her your thing. She just like flips you a copper back and she's like, all right, you should have shown me the note.
Awesome. Also, did Lyra have to pay by like the tablespoon for the salt? Is this like a...
I mean...
It's a copper and a half.
Salt's free. So, are you guys... continuing to chat, or are you going up to bed?
Well, based on the fact that Ikmer can get free drinks based on the note, he would get like every drink possible because it was free.
Every,
like,
so she makes you the Pathfinder, the Galarian equivalent of a soda pop.
Something
she
like
hands
that.
It over to you.
Yeah.
Oh, this is the good stuff. This is artisanal root beer.
Yeah, and he would drink it incredibly fast based on, like, he has clearly never had this before, but he is ingesting it like his life depends on it.
Igmar's, like, eating, he's ordering food, and he's getting soda, and he's like, yeah. A kid, he's like a kid at a sleepover, and he's just, like, gorging himself.
Oh, yeah. Yep. Drooling everywhere.
Drooling everywhere. Who's this gassy kid at the bar?
Lear would definitely be hanging out at the bar, too, just kind of watching all of this unfold, continuing to just drink her salt water, but conversing here and there in between bites and gulps of her beer.
Yeah, Ikmer would definitely talk with his mouth full. So,
all right, let's do some Foley work. Make it happen.
Oh, God. That's not good radio.
Not good radio. Make some mouth noises, please. Okay, yeah. So Lyra's talking to Ik.
Matumbe is with this group and participating in conversation, but he's not eating, he's not drinking anything except for his water. He has his big ironbound book open in front of him, and he's reading it in between responding to questions and asking people things. And you'll also see that he is scribbling in the margins, like writing notes. And it's in a language that most, if not all of you, don't understand. It looks like scribbles.
What language?
But it means
that?
Something. Polyglot.
Oh, okay.
The language of the Mwangi Expanse.
That's right.
Yeah, I don't know. I know a few languages, so I wanted to double check.
Okay. So you guys, you know, it's getting late. You guys are chatting and the conversation kind of dies because you have a dude sitting in between you just like reading, drinking water like a fucking idiot.
Wow.
you have a kid, Griffin. Like, literally with a belly ache. Like, oh, I don't feel so good. You have a girl that's consumed, like, a metric ton of salt. And then you have this drunk Wyang that's had, like, two beers.
Eclipse is probably, like, pretty much wasted at this point.
All right, so are you guys going to bed? Is that the vibe I'm starting to get? Ikmer with a tummy full of root beer, you know. Oh, he's cracking open another
root beer.
Is that a root beer, Brooks? Is it?
Yep. Hard. Oh, definitely still White Claw.
Oh, okay. Just checking. Yes. All right, so.
White Claw, please sponsor us.
Jeez.
So you guys
at least I'm subtle with my hands product placement.
Yeah, subtlety has never been any of our strong suits, I don't think.
Yeah, I mean, well, when you just have a delicious beer from the land of sky blue waters.
Look, we just want our booze paid for.
please, Vladdy Daddy, give it to me. Okay, so you guys all basically head to bed. You know your rooms are paid for, so that's good. If you're Ikmer and have zero money. So you wake up in the morning and... And this morning is is the morning of the funeral. So how appropriate you'd be awoken by a cheerful rooster sitting on the perch outside of the Outward Inn. So you guys get up and you gather your bearings. You probably bump into each other in the hallway or enjoying your nice continental breakfast provided by the bartender at the Outward Inn who's been awake since you went to bed. But I'm going to assume since you all met last night and you did chat and you all know that you're here for the funeral that you probably leave for Casa de Lorimore together.
Yeah, I imagine so. And yeah. Matumbe's wearing exactly what he wore yesterday. This is his garb for fighting in. This is his garb for praying in. This is his garb for basically everything.
Well, it's funny you say that. Ikmer doesn't have any other change of clothes. So
it's his garb for fighting in. It's his garb for praying.
Exactly.
Okay, so you guys head down basically the main drag in Ravengrow. And you pass a couple of not impressive looking buildings. It's kind of a small town, but you know it immediately when you get to Professor Lorimore's house. It's kind of an imposing Gothic inspired building. It's kind of like a McMansion. It's not overly huge, but it's definitely too big for Lorimore and just his daughter to be living there. So I assume, like, one of you is in front and probably knocks on the door.
I'll go ahead and knock on the door.
Okay, so Matumbe knocks on the door.
Okay. Sirenscape on point today.
Oh, yeah. That's all them. So Matumbe knocks on the door, and he's, you know, you kind of hear, like, some shuffling behind the door, and this kind of frazzled-looking woman opens the door, and she looks a little more frazzled than she does in this picture, but you guys can take a look. That's Professor Lorimore's daughter, Kendra. She's about 25. She's got dark brown hair. She's pretty. She's not, like, drop-dead gorgeous or anything, but you're like, oh, for being an old wizard's daughter, you're kind of all right.
Not really.
So you guys, I'm assuming, introduce yourself. Kendra opens the door and she's like, Oh, hi. Are you guys here for the funeral?
My lady Kendra, I am sorry for your loss. My name is Matumbe. I am here to dig the grave.
Oh, okay. Matumbe, was it?
Yes.
Matumbe, I'm going to need you to, I'm going to need you to head to the gravesite. We're burying him today. I don't know if you got the memo, but you're supposed to be out in the restlands. Hopefully digging this grave that my dad's supposed to go in. I'd invite you in, but you really have to go.
I will take my leave.
Okay, so Matumbe kind of actually knocks on the door and is like, hi, I'm here for the party. Walks right back down the street. And she points you in the right direction of the rest land, so.
How long do you think that's going to take? Like, am I back soon? Am I back?
I mean, you're an able-bodied Shaquille O'Neal. I think digging a 6-foot deep hole, probably.
10-15 minutes.
Pound it out.
Tops. Matumbe the dump truck.
Roll a profession.
Yeah, roll a profession gravedigger.
No, I don't think I took that, unfortunately.
I don't think that common profession, yeah. Okay, so Matumbe heads off. The rest of you, Kendra seems kind of curious. She's never really met. She might have met you, Lyra, maybe in passing, but she really doesn't remember you much because really her dad was more interested in all of you. And so she basically asks, so I think you are the four that my dad had left in kind of his last will to invite to his funeral. I didn't know any of you very well. There's a couple of other people that I invited, but I had met them before. So who are you guys? How do you know my dad?
My name's Lyra. I think we've maybe met before, but it was a long time ago. Your father saved me a long time ago from a cult and has been helping me tame my nightmares and keep them under control.
Oh, you've been to the house before, I think.
A few times, but not super recently.
Well, welcome back. Lyra, was it?
Yes.
Okay, it's great to meet you again, I guess. Please come in. All of you, please come in and tell me a little bit about yourselves.
Eclipse, again, takes off that cloak and very aggressively kind of shoves her hand out at her and says, hello, I am Eclipse, or E. I didn't know your father, but my dad adventured with him.
Who is your dad?
Burnett.
You don't look like Burnett.
I was adopted.
I can tell. So Burnett was your dad. Do you know how to play music?
Not really. I wasn't really taught that.
Oh, I just would have thought Burnett's daughter would have, you know. He just loved that lute he had. I remember when I was a kid, he used to come visit my dad, and he would play this lute, and it was the most beautiful music.
Yeah, he used to play that so that I could go to sleep. I'd like to not talk about this anymore. Thank you.
Oh, okay. Just wanted to share memories about my dad, I guess. Sorry. And who are you? You seem like you're a little young to have known my dad. He was kind of an older guy.
Well, I just know your dad. Well, we were traveling together, or I guess I was part of the caravan that he was riding with one day, and we kind of happened upon a pack of wolves, and just helped him out when I could, and protected him a little bit. It was really no big deal, but he was really nice to me, and that's what I remember the most about him. And not really too many other people are, so it was a big deal to me.
Oh, I'm so glad my dad could be that person for you. What did you say your name was?
Sorry, my name is Ikmer, but you can call me Ik for short.
Do you like being called Ik?
You know, that's just kind of what everyone else calls me, so I go along with it.
Okay, Ik. I'm really pleased to meet you.
Nice to meet you, too.
So, why don't you all come in, take a seat. I have some, I don't know if you got breakfast. I know I paid for the continental breakfast, but that was my sister upstairs.
Sirenscape, what are you doing?
If you're still...
I tried changing it up to the old piano, just started playing by itself. And that had more people than piano than I expected.
Yeah, that didn't quite sound like a piano.
All my pianos sound like that.
Hmm.
We'll talk off air.
So I don't know if you had breakfast, but if you're still hungry, I have some snacks, like hors d'oeuvres and some drinks if you want to sit down in the parlor.
Eclipse is still feeling like slightly hungover and is weighed down for snacks.
Weighed down for snacks. So you guys go to the parlor, Matumbe. I assume they're going to spend some time in the parlor. We'll see you come back like an hour later, right?
Yeah, sure.
Before, you know, the... I wouldn't call them festivities. The funeral procession begins. So.
Well, like I said, if it takes 10 minutes for Shaquille O'Neal to dig a grave and, you know, it takes 25 minutes to walk out, 25 minutes to walk back, an hour sounds about right.
You know what? We'll reach out to Shaquille O'Neal and ask him.
Yeah.
I feel hey, like Shaq, that's have you ever killed somebody?
You haven't dug a grave.
I'm it sure it could be we'll shallow.
I just need a rough estimate.
Definitely, we'll get a response very quickly, you know.
Yeah, Shaq's going to come back with his media manager, like, you can't portray me in this light.
I do not want to talk like this.
Yeah, I could see where that would be a problem for the podcast.
So, Matumbe, I saved you a plate of hors d'oeuvres, but I kind of ate them all.
Thank you for saving me the plate. I am glad that I filled up in the continental breakfast.
All right, so you guys have had your fill of snacks. You've chatted maybe a little bit with Kendra, but she's kind of attending to some other guests that have arrived, so she's not, you know, she was interested in who you guys are, but she's definitely got a lot on her plate today. So she does kind of enter the parlor and say...
Everybody that's in here, we're about to start the procession. My dad's coffin is outside. Do you guys know who wants to be a pallbearer? I need six. I'm sorry, you're a little small. If we try and balance the sides, I don't know that it would be comfortable for you.
E very sadly puts her hand down.
So if you guys want to volunteer to be pallbearers, you may. There are a couple other people here. The professor was a relatively popular guy. You met him in a bunch of different situations in a bunch of different lands. So he's got a lot of acquaintances and friends that showed up for this. I mean, not over the top, but there's a decent amount of people for it being a small village in Ustalav.
Whoa, so, Sirenscape.
It's coming in big 2 minutes into the play run.
So you guys go outside and you see this coffin, you see the spots for pallbearers. Kendra takes the lead. It's tradition in Ustalav, which Motumbe probably knows being a worshiper of Phrasma for the closest family member to kind of lead the funeral procession to the grave.
Mm-hmm. And I will volunteer as a
pallbearer. Yeah. Okay. So Matumbe takes up, call it the, well, you're a big guy, so you'd probably be in the middle just so that you don't offset it to one side.
That's a fair point.
And based on that, I would assume, but Ikmer would volunteer to offset that height difference on the other side.
And before Ikmer volunteers for that side, you feel a kind of gauntlet hold your shoulder, and you hear,
"Whoa there, young man. Hold. I'll take the other side for this man." And you see this man in resplendent armor, and
Lyra looks over, and it's her dad. And he's come to the funeral to pay his respects to Laura Moore. He's 6'6", more than a match for, I guess he's a little shorter than Matumbe, but I think he could offset his height difference. So he says, "What's your name, boy?"
I'm Ick.
Ick, you should stay closer to the front. You wouldn't be able to see over me, would you?
No, I guess not, no.
You're a good lad.
And so, Ikmer, you probably take the... say Matumbe's on the right side in the middle. Lyra's dad's going to be on the left side in the middle, and then Ikmer will be on the top left, basically. And so, you see... Lyra, are you...
Lyra would definitely volunteer as well, so wherever she can help.
Lyra, you could probably go opposite side of Ikmer. I know you're not that tall, but I think we got two dudes in the middle probably bearing most of the weight of the coffin, so.
Yeah.
And Ikmer probably wouldn't let it fall.
Yeah, I'm like a normal-sized human true. Female, so yeah. not super tall.
Ikmer's only 6 foot, so it's...
I wouldn't be that much shorter than you.
Yeah, it's not that absurdly big. Tall.
So you take opposite of Ikmer and behind the two tall boys... You see a man kind of decked in scholarly robes, and Lyra, you kind of recognize him, and he takes up the spot behind your dad, and behind Matumbe, you see this strong, kind of she's put herself together woman, and. She grabs the rear right, and you guys pick the professor off the ground, and you begin kind of the slow journey. Matumbe could tell you it's kind of a hike to where mm-hmm. the professor is going to be buried. And so as you enter the Restlands, which is what they call their cemetery in this town, there's actually a Pharasman church. So this is a Pharasma-run cemetery. So you enter through what's called the Eversleep, and it's a path near the top of the Restlands. So you guys can see I've drawn a map of the Restlands. Foreboding.
Only the players around the table can see. The people at home cannot see.
Well, yeah, no, I'm saying you guys as in use guys at the table, not use guys listening to me. How's that?
The the northernmost road.
That, so just know
comes in
for the folks at home that aren't used to maps. I'm going to describe this map to my players, and generally, a normal map is drawn in 5 foot increments.
Yeah, I got to stop you here. I don't see a compass rose here. I have
Thank
no
you.
Sense of direction.
There's no compass.
North,
rose.
South, east, west.
What?
Does that
None
help?
Of yeah. us looked at it that way.
This just takes me out of the narrative.
So, oh, gosh,
just
have another drink. So, the way maps are drawn in Pathfinder and in Dungeons and Dragons are in 5 foot squares, and usually a player occupies a single 5 foot square. The way this map has been drawn, because it's such a big area, is that each square represents 20 feet. So these people are these guys are actually going to be hiking a decent distance to the final burial of Professor Lorimore. They're probably hiking about 200 to 300 feet with this coffin. So as they enter the Restlands, you guys can see that it's a very pristine graveyard. It's well-kempt. The stones that you see are all in perfect order. The grass is trimmed. The mausoleums, as you enter through the Eversleep, the mausoleums to your left are all in perfect condition. The gates in front of them are oiled. Steve, as a worshiper of Pharasma, as Matumbe, as a worshiper of Pharasma, would probably be pretty impressed by this display of devotion, because they're treating their dead almost better than the buildings you saw in the town.
Absolutely. And as a As I'm on the right side of the casket, I'm holding the casket with my left hand. With his right hand, Mutombe draws a spiral with his finger over his heart.
And you can see most of the people aside from, well, actually, this is a good opportunity to roll. Everybody besides Steve, because Steve is a worshiper, Mutombe is a worshiper of Phrasma, roll me a knowledge religion. And you can do it on train because you're... You can also do a perception. Dang, girl, throw it in the box.
But it also was a natural two.
Well, shit. Perception, right?
You can, yeah, you use perception if you don't have knowledge religion.
Six.
A six perception. What about you, Lyra?
Seven.
Ooh, seven. How about Ick?
Actually, 19.
So Ikmer looks around him and sees that a lot of the people upon entering the graveyard are drawing the spiral on their chest as a holy symbol of Phrasma. Lyra and Eclipse don't catch that, but it's not a huge deal. It's just a sign of respect to the dead and to the god. So I think everybody around you would probably realize that, you know, you're not from here and you probably don't observe the same customs.
Mm-hmm. So Ikmer would try to replicate, but do it wrong.
He still couldn't get it after he'd do the spiral the wrong way.
Yeah, it's like counterclockwise.
Yeah. Yeah, he does the sign of the cross, but upside down.
Oh god.
Oh boy.
So you guys approach the rest lands and you're walking by some mausoleums and you actually see a storm on the horizon. You actually see this group of dudes start walking up on you guys, and at first they seem like they're approaching from a couple of the different paths that you can see in the graveyard, but as they get closer, you can see they all gather together and start walking towards you and the coffin.
And what do they look like? What are they wearing?
They look like kind of your average villager, like farmers and that kind of person. They're not like well clad in armor like some of you are. They just like, you'd think they were regular citizens of Ravengrow.
So okay. Is it a bunch of like angry villagers, Frankenstein style, or no?
Happy or frustrated?
Well, they're a little bit out. Make a perception check.
This went so well last time.
I got a six total.
Natural 20.
Natty 20, baby. First one of the podcast.
I got 14.
Ooh. 13 here.
Okay, so everybody above 10.
Not me.
can see that the villagers are wielding, they have like farming tools in their hands. And as they start towards you, you guys have made it a little bit further into the graveyard past the mausoleums, if you could place your
I got it.
Characters. So on the corner of Eversleep and Dreamwalk?
Yep, the Dreamwalk.
Dreamwalk.
And so if one of you could place a token for Kendra in front, then we can begin. So you see these villagers approach down the path, down the Dreamwalk, or no, sorry, the Eversleep.
Behind us or in front?
In front of you. They're coming straight on towards you. And a man kind of in the middle of the group, so they're in a mob, those of you with enough perception could count. There's 12 of them. And they look like they're kind of getting amped up and into a froth. And the man in front says, "That's far enough. We've been talking, and we don't want Lorimore buried in the Restlands. You can take him upriver and bury him there if you want, but he ain't going in the ground here." And Kendra, I mean, it's her dad, and she's right in front, and she says, What are you talking about? I arranged it with Father Grimborough. He's waiting for us. The grave has already been...
And he interrupts her. You don't get it, woman. We won't have a necromancer buried in the same place as our kin. I suggest you move out while you still can. Folks are pretty upset about this right now. And does anyone want to interject at this point, or are you just kind of watching this unfold with Kendra?
Oh, yeah, without a doubt, Matumbe is going to interject.
Okay. What do you say?
Matumbe is going to say, "Sir, this is a holy ceremony. You will stand down now." And that's going to be an intimidate check.
Okay.
It's going to be a 21.
A 21. And he falters and he's, "Well, what do you know about our customs?"
"I know quite a great deal about the Phyrasmid customs. Your local customs are irrelevant."
"You ever had a graveyard, sir? You ever buried your dead here and had a sacred place? You ever done nothing but wandering around?"
"I have buried plenty of dead, maybe not here, but I have certainly buried my fair share, and perhaps more than you."
Okay. He's getting worked up, and he didn't like you from that intimidate check.
Uh-oh.
So I'm going to need you to roll a diplomacy.
All right.
Calm him back down.
It's a natural 19 on the die. That brings it up to a 23 with a +4 on my diplomacy.
And you can see, like, the ringleader guy's kind of in the middle of the group yelling at you. And he's like, "All right, like, I don't want any trouble from you. I understand you know, you seem to know more than me, maybe, about the Phyrasmid custom." But, and as he says this, the man behind him hits him with the blade of his shovel.
Oh, shit.
And he falls to the ground. And
the "What are you doing?"
And about three of the men tear from the back of the group running. They were afraid of what you said before, and then they just watched this retaliation happen in their own group. You guys see the guys in the front brace themselves and then start running. And before you all roll for initiative, I need everybody to finish their drinks. Because we'll see you next week.